Welcome to the Lending Forward podcast, brought to you by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. This is your home for real discussions about the mortgage and housing industry. Our hosts are here bringing you firsthand accounts every week from people at the heart of the business. And we're chatting with professionals from all corners of the industry as they help cultivate transparency around the future of the industry we love. Together, we are lending forward all we know to you. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another episode of Lending Forward. I am your host, Hannah McManus, and I'm joined today with Tyler Osby. I got the chance to see Tyler speak at a Housing Wire event. I want to say it was over the summer, but it wasn't. I'm pretty sure it was early fall. Conference season goes all year long. Tyler, we are so excited to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, this is actually the first time you and I have sat down and actually chit-chatted a little bit. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you're in Iowa, and I know you have been originating loans for quite a while. But other than that.
Yeah. Well, so I live in Des Moines, Iowa. I'm a city guy. Really have spent zero time on farms, which is what everybody thinks of when they think of Iowa. I've been in the mortgage industry as a loan originator for 21 years. I started real young. Like I started part-time when I was 19. I think I have a similar story to a lot of people where I kind of repeated my first year several years in a row, kind of living a little aimlessly. And then I got really fortunate and left Iowa to go to some events to learn more about how top producers were doing things, because at the time there was someone I worked closely with that was doing like three units a month. And to me, that guy had everything figured out. But then I went to an event in Las Vegas. If anybody remembers the old Loan Toolbox business plan events, that's where I ended up. And there were people up on stage that are closing like 20 and 30 units a month. And I remember like sitting in the audience doing the math. And I'm like, that's different than three units. It really, really changed my perspective. And, the difference of how someone operates a mortgage practice when they're only doing, a couple loans a month and closing 20 to 30 is quite a lot different. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of things I needed to do to make that possible. But I would say at that stage, which was about 3 or 4 years in, I really started, doing those things and implementing them. And, things have really improved since then. I had the really good fortune to have an open-ended period of time to kind of search for my next employer after I spent 4 years going to 5 different companies, kind of like chasing a larger commission split, which I think a lot of people can relate to. And then I realized, oh, it's not the money that's the problem. there's some other things. Maybe part of it is me. And that's when I started interviewing a lot of places. I actually ended up interviewing 34 or 36 companies. I forget which, but a lot. Anybody who's in the mortgage business kind of knows it's not like we're being interviewed as loan originators to get the job. It's more so the loan originators interviewing the company. And hopefully that doesn't come off pompous, but that's, in my experience, that's the way it is. And I interviewed a lot of places and really quickly disqualified a lot. But I ended up settling on Fairway to be the right choice for me at the time, which was a little over 15 years ago. And I always say, like, moving companies is the big thing, and you usually lose like a year or two every time you switch because it takes a while to kind of like get used to how things operate. But I was really fortunate to find Fairway, and they were willing to give me a chance when I was 24 to run a P&L, which was a big risk. And I think it's worked out all right for both of us. Fairway's grown explosively since I joined them 15 years ago. And they're still a really great partner. And as we both know, there's a ton of really great mortgage companies out there. You just got to find a place that you feel like you're in a good partnership with. And I feel really fortunate that I found that.
That's awesome. I mean, that you've been there for 15 years. I mean, that's almost unheard of right now.
It's unusual.
The jumping. But you said something.
I think I got lucky. But you got to do your research before you pick.
For sure. And I want to go back to your time in Vegas because you said something that, you're always looking for the commission. You're always looking for the commission split. But you actually have to look inward and realize that, it's your process. It's the way you're operating your business that can really dictate, your income. So Talk to me a little bit about that mindset shift. I mean, was it the conference that really clicked, or did you have to start putting in some work? I mean, what did that
look like? There was a lot of things. Yeah. I mean, there's like self-work, right? Like I had to transform how I identified like myself as a business owner, right? Like I kind of saw myself as just an independent loan originator that plugged into whatever system was there. And I had to do it the way that they told me to. And, you know, when the way that they told me to was producing, you know, a maximum of 3 units a month, it's shocking that I never exceeded 3 units a month, right? Sarcasm. But when I went to Vegas and I start seeing how some of these people are just crushing it, and honestly, like, they seem to not be miserable, you know, like they weren't overworked. They had a pretty good process in place. I just realized that I had a lot of blind spots. So one of the first things that I did was get really clear on it, every one of us has the choice to kind of have our own unique, perfect loan process, stealing from what Tim taught a long time ago and still does. And it really transformed how I thought about my business. I think the big thing that I had to wrap my head around was I am an independent business owner that is contracted to work with a company, you know? And as soon as I took ownership that was my process and, you know, I was able to kind of do what I wanted with it, that was key. Now, to be frank, not every company is a great fit for that. That's why when I interviewed 36, I was quickly able to eliminate a lot of them. But, you know, I was able to finally create a process that I was really proud of, and something that was scalable. And it, for me, it's always been, I think, like for a lot of us, about delivering an amazing experience to the client. We all have to be competitive, like rates and costs. Like if you're totally out of the market, you're out of business. Mm-hmm. So you can't compete on that. You got to have a really amazing experience and one that's, you know, referable, one that people are excited to talk about. And that's where all my focus went after going to some of those events. And that's what really grew my business and put me on a trajectory where I could build more of like a reputation-based business, which I think is what we talked about at HousingWire. So
it is. And it's what I want to talk about today too, because, you know, at HousingWire, you said something along the lines of, you know, your reputation is always going to be more competitive than the rate or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I just want you to talk through that because I thought that was brilliant, but also, it's something that I think every loan originator should know and understand, but we get so caught up in the transaction sometimes that we do just forget.
Yeah. Well, it's such a competitive business. I mean, people, when they hear I'm in Iowa, they kind of think like, oh, how competitive could it be? Like nobody wants those measly loan sizes. And I kind of used to think the same thing, but all of a sudden, like it's been this crazy competitive business, even locally for us, where we're competing against credit unions that, you know, they've got people working there that are willing to work for a whole lot less. They're great people, but that's the model they choose to participate in. And, you know, they don't deliver an amazing experience. They just deliver a really incredible price. Mm-hmm. And we've seen market cycles, or I've seen market cycles already where I can see that that's not a sustainable model. You know, if you're constantly trying to be the cheapest person in the market, it as soon as you start getting hit with some buybacks, like you're out of business, you know, it's a really hard business to stay in. And, you know, the good news for a lot of loan originators is we don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. Buybacks aren't really something that you become aware of unless someone brings you into the conversation, explains to you how the economics of this business work, which I'm super fortunate that Fairways educated me. So I feel like armed with that. But if you're just playing in debt, you know, and you're just trying to get the cheapest money you can, you don't understand all the things that can wipe a business out. But for me, what I realized is to deliver a really amazing experience, you have to have revenue to be able to staff up and have technology in place and hire the right people to do the right things and, you know, just consistently deliver a really amazing experience. And I really enjoy competing over the long haul because that reputation always catches up with people. You know, like even an amazing loan originator who works at one of these folks who compete to be best on rate, it's a capacity point where they're like, you know what? Like, I'm not going to call you back today. Like, I don't have time. I've got a kid's game that I want to go to, or whatever. And that doesn't make them bad. That makes them human. So they hit a capacity issue, and that starts deteriorating on their reputation and impacts the ability for their agents to recommend them. Because if they're not getting calls back, they look bad. You know, for me, like, my team is always focused on delivering a really great experience at a competitive rate and cost. So that way people can always count on us. And being able to count on something or somebody it surprises me still, but it is a highly referable skill or quality of a business. And that's been our focus, because I know that it's a sustainable one.
Yeah, for sure. So talk to me a little bit about how you really leverage the power of reviews to build your
business. Well, so I want to take a step back and be a little vulnerable on the story of why I focused on reviews, because I kind of like stumbled into it. Back, you know, when I was first kind of growing and I was doing maybe 4 or 5 units a month, I got really frustrated when I would look at the scoreboard in the industry of how much volume did you do, or how many units, if I'm lucky, because in Iowa, we focus more on units than volume. But I would always feel less than, because there were people who were always doing significantly more than I was. And listeners might be able to relate to that. And what frustrated me is I knew, like, for a fact that we did a better job for these people we were doing loans for than our peers were, right? And I knew that if someone were to survey those other people's clients and say, what was your experience like? They weren't raving fans. I mean, they closed and they would never talk to that loan originator again, because one, the originator doesn't have processes in place to stay in touch with them. And two, like, they just didn't wow them. And you don't repeat business with people who don't wow you. It's just a very transactional relationship. So I was sitting in a coaching event. I was a part of a strategic coach with Dan Sullivan, who's not an industry specific guy, but just an amazing teacher. And he taught, he's amazing. Love Dan. But he asked this question at a workshop once, and he said, you know, are you playing a game that you can win? And it stuck with me. I was like, well, I can't win that game right now. Like, I'm not going to be the top unit producer in Iowa or in my company or whatever. So he said, you got to pick a scoreboard that you can win. And that's when I had to, like, kind of noodle on it. Because honestly, like, at the time, there really wasn't one that existed, Hannah. Like, that wasn't a thing. So I decided that reviews were a good scoreboard, that I could get the feedback from people that, you know, I actually cared about. That was my clients. And we started accumulating a ton of reviews, because I made one really big sprint at it for clients that we had already served in a short period of time. And we went from, like, I don't know, 10 reviews to like 90. It's really, really good. Yeah, it's great. And then, like, I felt like it kind of filled me up a little bit, because I saw that people really appreciated what I did. And I quietly was building this reputation that nobody was paying attention to. But it was a scoreboard that I could dominate. Mm-hmm. Fast forward, you know, several years, and now we're to a phase where those reviews that are out on Google or Yelp or Zillow — I do focus on Google. If anybody ever wonders where should I go, focus on Google My Business for sure. But we routinely get 3 inbound leads per week on average. Some are better, some are worse, but on average, if you look at the year to date, it's 3 inbound leads a week, where these are people who are, like, as good of an inbound opportunity as, like, a referral from a top agent that we work with or a past client. They're already, like, excited to talk to us. In fact, a lot of them will go from that phone call directly to applying and giving us, like, all their most sensitive information. And it's all based on that reputation that they read about online with reviews, you know. And, you know, we've been working at this for a while, right? So we've got, like, 12 or 13 years of review getting, but we're up to, like, over 1,200 5-star reviews, which is great, because it sells us, and it gives social proof. Like, as a marketer, social proof is really important, that we know what we're doing and they can trust us. And when you look up these other people who, you know, back then were killing me in terms of production — nowadays it's a little bit more of a fair fight. But, you know, you look them up and you Google them, they don't have much. You know, there isn't a lot as far as an online reputation goes. So it's a lot more fun to compete with them in a playing field where we can compete evenly, you know. And that's been really, really helpful for our business.
I love that. And I mean, psychologically, it's got to make you feel good. I mean, when you're getting, especially today in today's environment, really for the past couple of years, I mean, you're just getting punched in the throat, like day in and day out. So just read a good review and to remind you of why you're in it and what you're doing and that how much this one person or this family appreciate. I mean, that's got to help you keep going in a tough environment too. I mean,
I think I learned this from Dan Sullivan too, but like the biggest thing for an entrepreneur is to protect your confidence, because if you feel like you're just getting punched in the throat all the time, it's really hard to show up and go to work and be your best self. It's always been a competitive business, but especially when it feels like the opportunities are harder to come by and every opportunity is just a dogfight to win. It's helpful to see that the people you are helping see the value of what you do beyond just being a great rate or whatever. And the other thing that's been cool is we can share those stories with the teammates that have a part in manufacturing that loan. Because as loan originators at Fairway, we call it the street people, right? Like you're on the street, you're working with the clients. The street is connected. The people who are a lot of the people that make doing loans successfully possible, like our underwriting teammates, our processors, our funders, our all the people, like there's so many people. When you can get a 5-star review from a client who, you know, is a first generation homeowner, like that's a really cool story. Mm-hmm. And being able to share that experience in a place that, you know, they know it's a legitimate experience, it's being shared and they can see that they had a part in that. It's honestly pretty fun, you know, because I think that if it feels like it's a helpless experience being a loan originator sometimes, you know, like you don't feel like you're seen. Imagine being someone in the manufacturing process that's like 5 steps removed from a client. You know, I mean, it can be brutal. So yeah, it allows us to share with them in the success of, you know, delivering a really great experience for the client.
That is really cool. I didn't really think about it that way, but that is an awesome way to keep your team behind you also, you know, going and fighting for you. And that's really cool. So talk to me a little bit, like actionable strategies that you took and that, you know, the loan originators listening to this episode can take away and start putting in to their practice.
Yeah. Well, so there's two main pillars, and I talk about this a little bit inside the Loan Atlas. I'm a faculty member for the Loan Atlas, if you're familiar with that systems. There's a ton of content out there about this. But the first pillar is clients that you've already helped. I don't like to call them past clients because hopefully they're always clients. Mm-hmm. But the folks that you've helped buy houses in the past is kind of a large group of people that if they haven't already written you a review, they're a really easy group to target and go after. But I teach kind of a series of touches. So there's a letter that I recommend sending along with phone calls and emails that follow up on that. And it's the same process I used when I went and got, I don't know, like 70 reviews or whatever in a really short period of time. You can go after that segment and get a lot of reviews in a really, really short order. And people love to help and tell their story, right? So I highly recommend people make that a big piece of this strategy. Additionally, if you already have like a survey or review getting process in place, like there's some popular systems that I probably should not mention by name, but there's a lot of companies out there that do this automatically. Mm-hmm. And it's cool, but no client is seeing them. Like no prospective client is seeing them. It's more of like a internal feedback mechanism. So you could copy those reviews that you have inside that particular domain and ask people to simply just post that same review they already wrote and putting it on Google. That's a really quick way to generate a ton of good reviews in short order. So the thing I will caution people on is if you do the system that I teach, it's highly effective and you will be flagged as suspicious on Google. It literally, because like How did you get all these reviews in such short order? So if that happens, they do eventually appear. Like they take you out of this, like, you know, Google jail, and it'll show up, you know, but just be aware that that happens. And then, you know, with the copy and pasting of that other popular system, that also will end up with the same result, but just be patient with it. But those are a couple takeaways on that. Also, I think it's important that you be mindful of who you're asking for reviews from with that group. Because if you have anybody who, I think we all have them, there's just clients that just didn't go in a way that you're proud of and you probably learned from it. Maybe not ask them for a review if you're going back to all your clients that you've worked with in the past. Because I think that would create some issues. That's the first major group that you can go after, though. And then the secondary is just your people that you work with moving forward. And if you don't already think of your mortgage business as kind of like an assembly line, if you will, which is not a sexy way to say it, I'll just go ahead and get that out of the way. But any person I know that's producing at any, you know, high level consistently, they all have a really great process. You just need to think about how you want to adjust your approach and making sure that asking for reviews becomes a standard part of how you do every loan. Because if you do it every single time, you're going to accumulate a lot of really great reviews. But the way that we do it is, obviously, when clients are working with us, we're kind of showing them examples, proof of success of clients that we've worked with and what they've had to say throughout. So when we start asking, it's never surprising. It kind of like they know it's a thing that we do. But we usually gain kind of a verbal agreement that they're going to help us out once they go under contract, because we want to find out in that conversation, you know, what does a successful, you know, mortgage process look like? You know, did you do it before? What'd you love? What would you change? This is your first time. What are your expectations? And then we tell them, like, perfect, we'll do all those things. And also, usually there's more things that we'll do. So we explain it, and then we ask them, when we're done with this and we help you successfully become a homeowner, would you be up for writing an honest review on your experience in working with us? And then we follow through on that once we get them, you know, clear to close. And we follow up with them several times post-closing for a number of reasons, but we always mention the review in those conversations. And we have a decent capture rate for those folks to leave great feedback. And those are the two things, and we just were consistent about it. It works really well.
That's awesome. So are you using one of the said platforms that also is getting the review?
No. So for me, very selfishly, I am interested in reviews that will help my business, not reviews that are just going to sit somewhere and be something I can point to someday. Mm-hmm. The difference with adding reviews on Google versus any of these other places is people actively use Google as a place to find people who can help them. The example I give, which I'm realizing how old I'm getting as I give this example and some of the reactions I get, but the example I always give is, growing up, we had a phone book and we had the Yellow Pages. And like, if you were a business owner, you better be advertising under mortgage in the Yellow Pages or you're really missing it. You know, nowadays nobody uses the phone book, but what has become the phone book is Google, and people will search like the word mortgage or, you know, mortgage broker, mortgage lender, whatever on Google. They don't say Des Moines, Iowa. They just mortgage lender. And then Google knows enough to provide them with local resources that support that need. And as it turns out, the way Google works is it geolocates where they're at. It shows who they think is the best match for that service provider, and then they rank them based on review. So if you've got a lot of really great reviews, you're totally stacking the deck to win that race and get that phone call. Where if you're letting those accumulate somewhere else, they aren't shown. I mean, respectfully, they just aren't going to come up, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that if you have something else in place, you put this in place in addition to that, or you know, maybe it replaces it entirely, depending. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Because regardless, you need to get the reviews out. I mean, that is your whole system, which makes a ton of sense. I'm just sitting here thinking about, you know, if somebody mentions a restaurant or they meant really anything. I mean, I literally just had to look for a new babysitter. I mean, that's the first thing you're going to do is I go to Instagram, but a lot of people are going to Google and Google's going to take you to wherever you need to go. But the first thing you're going to do anywhere is look at reviews. I mean, if someone isn't getting good reviews, you immediately skip them. Or worse, if you can't find them, they don't exist.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you bring up a great point. There's two different case studies there. There's the people who don't know who they want to work with, and they're just looking for a specific product category. Reviews will help you win that game because you're going to show up in that 3-pack for Google, right? Mm-hmm. The second use case is someone who's been told, hey, you should call Tyler Osby. He's really great. And then you go Google Tyler Osby, and if you can't find anything, you're like, next. Or if you find some negative stuff, you might say, next. Yeah. The example I gave at Housing Wire was my own personal experience searching for something. And then
by the way, you don't have to share it on here.
It's a good story.
My husband did the same thing. Same process. So it was, I think we both have 3 kids. And so after the third,
there's a story about how I found a doctor for vasectomy for anybody who's not familiar with the story. But the crazy thing is like that same experience happens when people are searching for literally anything.
Yeah.
I posted on Facebook for the recommendations, which is still hilarious. But when I got recommendations, like I got a lot of recommendations for one place. And when I went to that one place's Google reviews, they weren't positive. I mean, like, I don't trust someone who has a 2.5-star rating to do something like that to me. So I just keep looking, you know? And the guy that won, you know, had one honorable mention. That's it. When I Googled him, he had over 100 5-star reviews. So it really does go to show you the power of that reputation, because people ask, but then they verify. They want to search for themselves, you know, is this a good referral? Even though the referral came from somebody I've known my whole life, I still trust strangers on the internet to validate this choice, you know? And that's just how humans behave now. So it's important we notice that and we just make the appropriate adjustments. And I think that this is how you got to kind of evolve. I don't know for a fact that this is how AI will make its decision-making recommendations, but I have pretty strong reason to think that they're going to follow a very similar formula to how Google does it. So I'm all in on this. I mean, it's a really, really big piece of our business.
I bet. Do you use this to strengthen like your agent partnerships? I mean, do you also share it with them, or do you ask maybe that the review mentions them? I mean, how do you incorporate your agent relationships or your builder relationships?
Yeah, there's a lot that you can do. So the first thing is, I think it's important that we try to help support our agents by reinforcing their importance in a transaction. So when I'm at a closing, for example, and I plug the review, I also mention right there at the closing table, and by the way, you know, this really helps out Hannah for her business. So if you want to help out with that, you know, write a 5-star review for her. That would be great, you know. So they have visibility that I'm asking and helping support their business, which is great. The other thing is when we get these reviews that come in, and this is my own personal decision. It's probably a little bit to do with some insecurities more than anything, but it turned out it seems to be a pretty good idea. I don't like to shine the light on myself of like, hey, look at me, I'm awesome, right? Like, this just doesn't fit my personality. But what I do like to do is shine the light on everybody that contributed to make that experience possible. So for me, I will send emails to all the agents involved in a transaction with a screenshot of the 5-star review. And I thank them for their help in the transaction. Because for anybody who's originated for any period of time, you know, if you have a terrible agent involved in a transaction, the chances of that earning a 5-star review are pretty slim, because the transaction sucked because the teamwork wasn't there. But when agents are at least doing all the things they should be doing, you're much more likely to get a 5-star review. And if they deliver an amazing experience, we're all going to get great reviews. So I find it's helpful to share that experience for two reasons. One, it helps us retain the agents we already work with. it reminds them why they refer us, right? Because we are focused on delivering an amazing experience. If they try out that person at the credit union, they're not getting that at the end. I promise you, they're not getting that. But the second thing is they, if they're new to us, it's an attraction strategy. Because if I'm shining the light on them for being the reason we were able to earn a five-star review, they immediately feel like this, it's a lot more magnetic experience for them, I think. But additionally, like it just shows like a proof of, you know, here's what you can expect when you're working with us, you know. And we're not shy about asking how we can help and hopefully do more business with them. But it's just setting up those conversations where I feel like they come a lot more naturally, I guess. And from a place that's more about them than about us. But yeah, I think those are a couple of really like very actionable things that, you know, I've taught in the past that seem to really get some traction.
I love that. Now, you mentioned a little bit about the Loan Atlas, and I want to give you a second to talk about it because I don't know how many listeners know what it is. So go ahead and share with everybody, what is the Loan Atlas and what are you doing?
Well, so I personally have participated in a lot of different coaching programs over the years, and they've all really been great. Like I've done everything from the Loan Toolbox, which, you know, back in the olden days was a couple hundred bucks a month and literally access to hours and hours and hours of content that I could learn in the privacy of my own home. And it was life-changing content. I went from that to a lot of like private coaching where I'd be in like small groups. Coaching is expensive. Like I have spent upwards of like $40,000 in a year for one coaching program, right? And it's like people do this all the time, but that's a really big price tag for most people. So the great thing about the Loan Atlas is Tim Brahim is who leads it. He saw this opportunity in the market where he's like, there's so many people that need some help. They need to learn, but they can't afford the price tag of his, you know, his more intimate coaching program that he's had for several years. And there wasn't a ton out there that was led by, you know, a lot of people who are actually in the trenches doing loans. Like there just isn't. So he was like, you know, I want to create something. And he has a lot of really great teachers that have all been a part of his more private coaching program that he's gotten to know over the years. And he asked, you know, several people to be a part of this faculty. And don't kid yourself. Like I'm learning from a lot of people who aren't in the faculty and we're sharing a lot of the stuff. So there's a bunch of killers that Tim's associated with, whether they're on the faculty or not. And we all share inside the Atlas what it is that we're doing to find success. So a good example, and we were talking about this briefly before we, you know, started the podcast, but I have packaged up like all of that, the stuff that I did with clients that we had already served for that campaign that I did like 12 years ago. And it hasn't just been done 12 years ago. Like I've been teaching that for years and years and years. It's been a very popular and successful campaign. I'll get you the link and maybe we can put it in the show notes or something, but it's free. Anybody can have access to it. But that will be a great way to get a sampling of like what is inside the Atlas. There's just hundreds of hours of content. But it's really fun to be a part of, because for me, like I can confidently say that my life would be a whole lot different if I hadn't found my way into like a community of people who were just really doing an amazing job in the industry. And frankly, just had a much better attitude about what was possible in the industry. The people I was in my office with just weren't, they weren't growing, you know? So I'm just excited to be a part of a community that is really invested in helping other people get better. And that's something I'm extremely passionate about and always, I think, will be.
I love that. And that kind of leads me into my last question for now is, how are you planning on lending it forward in 2025?
It's a great question. So I've got this, and I'll I don't know if you can see this or not, but I've got this thing on my screensaver. I'll read it because as everybody's listening, they can't see it. But I got this list of like, I know I'm successful when. I stole this from a buddy, Dean Jackson, who's a mentor of mine. He's a marketing guy. And it's just statements of like, I know when I'm moving towards these things, I know I'm successful. It's not like a pass or fail. It's just, where am I headed? And I've got, I'll just list it off. I'm available to put my girls first. Got three little girls and I'm married to a beautiful wife that helps support me in my craziness. I get to choose the people I do business with. I don't have to worry about money. I get to have an open relationship with the people I care about, meaning I tell them what I'm thinking. If I fast forward, the last one is I'm able to help other people become the best versions of themselves. And for me, that's the stuff that's really fun, is like meeting other people at different stages of the industry, including people who are like a whole lot further ahead than I am. You know, like some of the people I get to hang out with, I'm kind of like, what? It seems weird. But if I can bring something of value to anybody to help them figure something out, whether it's personally, professionally, whatever, that's hugely helpful. So I'm going to continue trying to find some opportunities to do that. I had a blast at Housing Wire, which is how we got connected. And there's a lot of stuff like that that I've had the opportunity to do. And we'll continue to seek out opportunities to do that, because that's definitely fills my bucket.
That's awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on the podcast today to share, you know, all of this information. And we will have the link in the show notes, so folks can go on and get a little taste of you know, what you're all about. But I really do appreciate it, Tyler. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, you bet. And if you don't follow me, you can follow me on like social media. Just my first and last name is generally my handle, but you can steal anything. Anything I'm doing is free to be stolen. I'm all about it.
I love that. See ya.
Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning into today's episode of the Lending Forward podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, follow us on Instagram at Lending Forward, on YouTube and LinkedIn. Tune in next week for another new episode and go lend something forward today. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSconsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender and employer. Located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 100, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23452.